This show furnished by Sid Levine.
Levine Show, and this is Sid Levine. Woo! Here we are in the house having a wonderful time. Okay, what a week we've had. What a tragic week we've had. The mass shooting in Vegas. All of our thoughts and prayers go out to all the victims, the wounded, the families and friends of all those affected by this tragedy. I've been going to Vegas with my family since I was 11 years old. And it just breaks my heart of what happened there. But hopefully people are resilient. The town will come back and it'll be fantastic, bigger than ever. So I've got an incredible panel tonight of fantastic actors and actresses and producers and writers. It's just fantastic. I've got Honey Lauren, who I've known for 29 years.
Yeah, since I was 14.
Since you were 14 years old.
And this is an earthquake in Hollywood because Harvey Weinstein.
Got, Nick Vallelonga, who I've known for about 29 years.
Yeah, when I was one.
When you were 1 year old. Yeah. And Nick is of course, I repped you years ago as an actor, but you have turned out to be an incredible producer and writer. And you, in my opinion, have hit it. Well, you're on your way.
We're still trying.
Yeah, well, I was trying, I guess. And Alan Maldonado, Alan's here.
This is
one hell of a actor, man, and
you,
entrepreneur.
Man. Appreciate
He's
it.
He's got everything going on and then some.
Hey, don't have a little fun right now. Life is good. Life is good.
You said it, and I have my beautiful and talented Liz Fuller sitting here enjoying the show and lighting up the room.
Oh, Sid, you're always so good. I have to say as well, let's just focus on Vegas for like 10 seconds or maybe, and then we'll move on. My friend Kenya, who runs Style and Society, was actually there at the festival. And, you know, we were here last week, Sid, weren't we? And we were all laughing and joking. We all went to the Polo Lounge after. And, you know, life changes in a flash of a moment. And for me, I think, you know, we do have to kind of round up the week and just say how devastating it was. You know, I spent 2-3 days glued to the TV just wanting to know, you know, as much as we could find out. And I think it's horrific and very sad. Now, me being British, I'm very different. You know, guns are banned in my country. I sit on the fence with that situation. We shouldn't go there tonight. But I will just say, you know, we do kind of have to acknowledge that, Sid, because this has been the biggest devastating situation that's ever happened in America, right? I mean, the numbers are absolutely gross. It's disgusting.
Yeah, the largest mass shooting in American history.
And I just wanted to say, you know, we're on radio, and I always think there's a lot of people that listen to KABC Talk Radio, you know, that people at home want to connect. They want to listen. And I remember our first week here, Sid, we had a caller come through and he was crying, you know. He'd been molested. Do you remember our first week
here
on the show?
I remember.
And I just think, you know, being a radio host, we touch so many people. And if there are people listening that just feel like they are disconnected from society, they don't have anywhere to go, and then one day they erupt like a volcano and cause devastation, don't go there. Literally, you know, reach out for help before you get to a situation like that.
Well said, Liz.
Let's move on anyway.
Let's
that was kind
on,
of very
yes.
serious, right? But we couldn't do the show tonight without talking about that.
Of
Sid,
course
could we?
Not. It's at home. Alan.
What's up, baby?
Well, what's going on?
Alan is straight out of Compton.
That's right.
I just had to
That's
put
right.
that in.
He is. So, Alan, first of all, thank you for coming.
No, thank you.
And
thank you.
I appreciate you being here. You are one working crazy actor.
Yeah, man.
You've got Blackish you've done, and then you're going back on the show soon?
Yeah. We started season 4 already. So,
Actually,
I make my return on the show this coming up Tuesday.
Okay.
This coming Tuesday. And then I have my show with Tracy Morgan called The Last OG, which comes out in the spring of next year. And then I write for the show Survivors of Remorse as well, so... I've definitely got my, you know, and I just finished doing NCIS and a few other shows I can announce yet, but yeah, I've been busy.
Well, you've worked with Denzel.
Yeah.
What's it like working with Denzel Washington?
It's incredible, man. You watch a master at work. You're really watching someone that knows how this business has been ran and you see that when you see how poised he is, how hectic a 3.5 month shoot can be, and how calm and cool he is always. Like, he's always the coolest person in the room, really? Man. And you just want a piece of that. You just want a percentage of that coolness, and that will just fill you right up. Just being able to watch him and, you know, following his footsteps on set and just kind of observe everything he does as far as how detailed he is and how comfortable he mm-hmm. is within himself and the character is phenomenal.
So the first big part, I guess, you got was on The Young and the Restless. You had a year contract.
Yeah.
And,
well, actually only had 3 episodes, and that's a long story about that. Basically, they created a role for me. I didn't get the role that I auditioned for. Hmm. They created a role for me, only promised me 3 episodes, and because they, you know, I continued to perform and they continued to love me, I ended up doing 17, and it was stopped abruptly from...
What happened? You got in a... Drunk driver hit you?
Yeah, I was walking. A drunk driver hit me going 65 miles per hour in a BMW Roadster. And I flew in the air, landed on my face. My right leg was broke. My spine was curved. And that definitely ended my stint, being that I didn't have a contract, nor was my character supposed to last as long as it did. So I was fortunate on that end, but not fortunate as far as being able to... bounce back.
How long ago was that?
That was in 2004. Wow. So I was 21 and definitely young. So I recovered pretty quickly. I will say my testimony to God is that the week my last stitch fell out of my mouth, I booked 3 TV shows in 1 week.
Wow.
So it definitely was confirmation that I'm doing the right things, and I continue to do the right things as things continue to excel for me. But that was definitely a difficult time.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that's probably a very humbling thing as well. When something like that happens, I think you probably appreciate life every single day, right?
Oh, well,
Would you say, I always think, do things happen for a reason? Would you say that you're a different person because of that?
Oh, man, most definitely. I believe the same thing as far as everything happens for a reason. And that's why I was never upset. Me being a pretty boy in a rough neighborhood that I grew up in, I was always the one that people challenged. So I was always a fighter. And if, you know, you put a scratch on my face, I would, you know, raise hell. And being that my whole face was, you know, distorted, I can't even describe how bad my face looked.
Well, you know, I wouldn't see that from today. Like, I can't see anything. You look fantastic.
I was blessed, man, and didn't have to do any, you know, surgeries or anything. I have stitches around my mouth, a little, like, scars here, but I definitely, my outlook on life changed. Like, you know, the grass is greener, the sky is bluer, but more than anything, I understand that tomorrow's not promised, and that when my day comes, I have to be honest with myself. When I look down on myself, will I be able to say that I gave everything did everything in my power to achieve my dreams, and I want to be able to say yes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, being an incredible actor and going through what you have.
Thank you.
You're an incredible entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Now, I want to hear about this app. This is interesting.
Yes. Everybody Digital. We launched October 3rd in the Apple Store, and we'll be in Google Play in the next month. Everybody Digital is the Netflix for short films. We will be streaming short films from around the world. We've curated films for the past 2 years. We have a vast catalog, and we're producing original content where we're rolling out original films, original digiseries, docuseries, along with animation, you name it. We're providing a lot of new content in a new space, being that short films have been overlooked for years. It's the one genre in this business that has yet to evolve, and Everybody Digital is set to change that, being that music videos have evolved. There's an industry for that. There's people that are making millions and billions from it, even to the point where Instagram and Vine stars are making millions now, where these short films have been left behind as just a stepping stone for filmmakers and stepping stone for actors, where there's no industry. When you make a short film, you basically take a handful of money and throw it in the fire.
So this app, what's it called?
Everybody Digital.
Everybody Digital. So yes. If somebody has a short film, can they upload it on there?
We're curating everything, meaning that you have to submit it, and then you have to be approved. You have to be accepted. Being that we want to showcase short films in the best light, being that the average consumer hasn't been able to see short films as they've been, you know, specifically for film festivals, as in the 80s and early 90s, they were discontinued and being in theaters where they ran before your feature film, where now as trailers have replaced them. And short films, for the average consumer, they have yet to enjoy these. So we want to make sure we give the creme de la creme to them, provide a great spotlight in order to create this industry where in 2 years, everybody digital will have set the tone and set an industry where short filmmakers can make money.
How long does it take to actually create an app and make it? Like, I don't really understand that side of the business. Like, is... That must be a lot of time, a lot of investment. Did you put together like a business plan? Was this something you did with your friends? Like, how does that side of it
work?
Well,
yeah, I definitely put together a business plan. Everybody Digital was in 2 years in development. So every app is different, meaning that the functions may be different. The interactive parts of the app may be different. So it could take longer for some. But ours took 2 years. This is something that I developed out of heartbreak. Being that I'm a short filmmaker, so I kind of consider it like FUBU, for us, by us, a short film app by a short filmmaker. And I had a film that went in countless film festivals around the country, won several awards. And after the 12-15 month window that you have in these film festivals, it was just over. Nothing, the average consumer didn't get to see it, being that the film festivals are set for that usually have the audience of your friends, family, the people in production, and people in the film industry. So the people that watch television and go to the movie theaters don't even know these film festivals exist or these films exist. And the beautiful thing about it is that we're resurrecting these short films from the past, being that even if you have a short film that's 10 years old, the world has yet to see it. And Everybody Digital is a platform that can showcase that. And if anybody out there is listening as a short film, just go to everybodydigital.com and there's an online application you can upload right there for submission.
So once you go on the app, how do you actually search for the film? Are they in genres or?
I'm glad you asked that. Being that our key demographic is for those individuals that are unplugged from television and that consume a majority of their entertainment through their mobile device.
So you mean the future generation?
Yes, exactly.
All the future.
We our categories are the basic comedy, drama, etc. But what's specific for us is that we have our content in 1 minute, 5 minute, 10 minute, and 20 minute sections as well. Where if you got 5 minutes before meeting, 10 minutes while you're on the bus or on the train, you can enjoy a short film that will fill that time up. As we all know, everybody's schedule is busy, and everybody's trying to fit as much as they can, and that's why social media and all of the short form media is exploding, is because everybody's on the go and everybody's enjoying media in between something else. And that's where Everybody Digital is catering to that demographic.
Well, I was going to ask you, you've seen obviously a lot of short films.
Yes.
anything stick in your mind that, like, the next, in your opinion, the next Spielberg or somebody that's...
It's several directors and, that I will say that are your favorite directors in feature films that started in short film. And that's what I think is special about this genre and why I look to bring a spotlight to it, being that your favorite director at some point made a short film. It's usually a way of passage for a lot of directors and entertainment, being that you don't have to spend that much money on it and the budget is extremely less than a feature film. So this is your opportunity to showcase your skills. So I could just point out the Steven Spielbergs and say, I'm pretty sure that I can go back in the 70s and pull up a short film that he made. And that's basically what I want to be able to create stars through our app. Directors, actors, just personalities will become stars through this app as well.
So is there a goal to kind of monetize this? Is there going to be a way where you can help raise money for any of these filmmakers? And when, say if there's somebody listening that has a short film and they submit it to you guys, do you decline anybody or you put in everything on that?
No, everything doesn't get on everybody. as I mentioned before, that we want...
So it's not everybody.
Yeah, we want the top. We want the best of the best, because we want to showcase this genre in the best light as possible, as this is new to a lot of individuals that have no clue what short films are. And the way Everybody Digital was built, like I mentioned, in 2 years, we'll be able to pay our filmmakers to license their film, just like Netflix. If everything goes according to my plan, we'll be in a position that we've created an industry for short filmmakers where they can actually make money and have a return and have distribution.
That's great.
You make me want to make a short film.
Go for it. Go
Alan,
for it.
I'm telling you, man, you're fantastic.
Thank you. That's a fantastic idea.
I want to talk a little bit. Nick Vallelonga. Nick,
yes, sir.
First of all, this is the first time I think we spoke face-to-face in, what, 28 years?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Nick is a great guy. He's got an incredible background. You were born in the Bronx, right?
The Bronx, New York.
And when you were, I don't know how old you were, when you were in the scene of The Godfather, in the wedding scene.
Yes.
How was that? Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember everything about it. Yeah.
How was it like to do it? Or?
It was amazing. I was always a TV nut anyway. Like my mother said, to shut me up, she just turned the TV on. So I was always fascinated with it. Loved movies. You know, I just was like that. So my father was working at the Copacabana, and Francis Ford Coppola and a couple of the casting people came in.
Uh-huh.
They liked him. He introduced them to some mob guys because they needed to have a little authenticity. So he was like hooking them up with people. And then they asked him to be in the movie. And they said, you have kids. We need kids. So my brother and I actually screen tested. They did a screen test of us. And I'm one of the little kids in the wedding scenes in The Godfather.
My.
So that was like my first film school in a way. Because I actually, even at that age, I was 11, I think, just past 10. I was fascinated by how a movie was made. I mean, it was all fake, smoke and mirrors, the walls. All of a sudden, the wall was taken away.
Right.
That's not a real wall. So I was running around like crazy and trying to get in front of the camera. And one day, the ADs grabbed me and brought me over to Francis Ford Coppola. And he said, you may not understand this, but we watch what we do the next day. Because I see you more than anybody. He goes, so today you're going to sit next to me. So I make sure you're not in any scenes. But they got me a little director's chair. And wherever Francis was, they put me so I was behind the camera. But there I was watching how a film was made.
Incredible.
That's how you start life, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's how you start your acting life.
So
where do you go from there?
So your first written movie that was Deadfall.
Yes.
That you wrote that. And it was starring Nicolas Cage and some people. I don't know. How many years ago was that?
Well, that was 92.
92.
I think.
Okay.
And that was when Cage was huge, and all these people were huge. It was Cage and Charlie Sheen when he was at his height, Peter Fonda, Talia Shire. Val Kilmer was doing it, and then he had to drop out. Michael Biehn took his place.
Okay.
And all these guys were really, really big. So it was that was the first script I wrote, yes.
And that was directed by Christopher Culpa.
Christopher Culpa, yes.
And did he co-write
it? We did the screenplay together.
They did it together, wow.
Yeah.
And that was your introduction into writing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'd written some stuff, and I had a short film done. And
there it is.
I know, I was thinking Nick was bound to have short films.
And, so that was the first big one.
Wow. From there on in, was it writing for you? Was it acting for you? Was it producing?
You know, I still think of myself as an actor, but I don't act as much because I don't try as much. And I reached a point, if there's actors out there, I just couldn't audition for people anymore. I just couldn't go into a room and have some 22-year-old girl reading with me. That was the last time, like, I really kind of auditioned. I went in for something, and there was, like, this 22-year-old girl, and she could barely read. She's putting me in, and I'm like, I should be directing the show, not even auditioning. But that's my own thing, but if I wanted to be directing, then I should have pursued that. But my point was, I had directed, I had written movies, I'd worked with a lot of big people, and I'm like, I'm auditioning for this thing, and I just said, you know what? Turn the camera off. I'm not doing it. She's like, what? I said, forget it. So,
do you put yourself in your movies?
I don't put myself in the movies if there's nothing really right for me. At the beginning, I used to write things for myself.
Right.
But I kind of stopped doing that. But if there's something in there that I think I could do or play, whether it's a role throughout the movie or if I do a scene, you know, I'll do it. But I've done some that I had people like, well, put yourself in it. But I felt, oh, let me just direct it. I didn't feel like, you know, there might be a role for me in it.
That's fantastic.
But, you know, all the things I've done are small indie things. And I now happen to have something that got a little bigger. But it's been years and years and years of banging around and just really not giving up kind of thing.
Well,
you know?
Nick, you got 5 projects in development right now.
I do?
Yeah, I'm looking at your IMDb. You're quite busy. I can see quite a few on there. Anything that you want to tell us about? Any good stories?
Well, the one I can only talk a little bit about is the big one now that I have. I wrote a true story that happened to my father in the early 60s. And
so your father had mob connections. I don't want to kind of gloss over that. Was that what picked up earlier?
What was your dad's name?
We got to go see the movie.
What was his name?
His name was...
mob doesn't exist.
Tony Lip was his nickname. That's whatever he was known as.
So Tony Lip was his name.
Have you ever seen The Sopranos?
Yeah.
My father was one of the... He played the New York crime boss, Carmine Lupitazzi, on The Sopranos.
Mm. Okay.
He was the big boss of
New
York.
Oh, wow.
A little bit of typecasting. But he was on there for about 4 seasons. And anyway, that was later in his life. Because after the Godfather thing, he got a lot of roles in movies. But back in the early 60s, and he was working at the Copacabana nightclub. And I wrote a true story based on something that happened to him then. And we're going to start production on if everything goes well, and about right after Thanksgiving.
Congratulations, man.
What kind of budget do you work with? A few films.
Oh, I've done movies for $35,000. I've done movies for $200,000, million. This one's a huge one, but I'm not directing this. Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers, Dumb and Dumber, Something About Mary. He's directing it. It's not a comedy. It's his first drama, and we have Viggo Mortensen, which was a big coup to get. An even bigger coup, well, I would say bigger, but is equally as amazing to me. We just got Mahershala Ali is going to play the other role.
So, wow.
To me, that's amazing.
Do you raise the money for the movie, or do you pitch it to the studio?
On some movies, I do.
Is that difficult?
Yeah.
So do you get one guy putting up all the money, or you get a group of guys?
It's different every time. It's different every time. And this one... is being done by a big company, Amblin. So this is different, as my participation is different. Usually I'm doing everything, raising the money, casting it, producing it, hiring the crews, you know, directing it. It all different. This one's big enough, and because it took a jump that I'm taking a little back seat. I'm still a producer on it. I'm producing.
How long did it take you to write it?
Pete. This one, I had a lot of it written over the years. And then a friend of mine who's a writer, Brian Curry, I told him the story one day. He's like, "Are you out of your mind?" He goes, "Why are you doing that?" When I told him the actual story, I go, "I'm going to do it." He goes, "When are you going to do it? When you're 80, when are you going to do it?" So he went and he told the story to Peter Farrelly, and Pete wanted to meet me. I pitched it to him. He goes, "This is the greatest thing I've ever heard. I've been looking for a drama for my whole career. Could I direct this? You know, would you give up the directing?" And I said yes. And then it took about 2 years on and off to write it, to get it right. I mean, I wrote the initial stuff, and then I wrote with Brian, and then Pete came in. But it's about, you know, you take a little creative license. It's about 85% of the actual real story, and then we had to fill in the gaps a little bit here and there.
You know? Now, you did, after 9/11, you did a film dedicated to the firemen and the policemen.
It was actually, I did a Christmas song.
A Christmas song.
About New York, called New York City Christmas.
And you did that, and I guess proceeds or whatever.
Went to the firemen's, the widows and orphans of the firemen in New York. That was me singing it and doing it. So about 2 years ago, Robert Davi did another version of it, a really good version of it. More of a Sinatra-esque swing type of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's available also. So they're both on iTunes and on YouTube and or wherever you download music.
So your stories that you create, that you write about, is it mostly things that are for real, like characters you meet or people you were
born? I mix things in. I mean, this one obviously, excuse me, is for real. This is a true story. But the other stuff, imagination, made up stories, you know. Maybe I'll bring in a character or two that I, from real life, but most of them.
Does it take a long time to write
I've written
from
scripts
page one to?
In a weekend, and I've written scripts in a year, 2 years. It all depends on what it is. So sometimes I burst it out and just I don't leave my room for 2 weeks. It's
really?
Just pizza and Chinese food boxes. And then I emerge with this thing and I go, where did that come from? You know, and then that it's sometimes it's like that and sometimes it's a painstakingly long process.
So while your friends, actor friends that knew you years ago and people, they want you to get them in the movies, help them out, right?
Always. And every actor.
And have you lost a lot of friends?
No, luckily or hopefully I've been able to put a lot of friends in movies. I do what I can, you know. It's could become a little bit of a joke. I had one thing, one friend of mine wanted to be in something, and I said, just said, there's nothing there. I don't have a role for you. I go, it's like the movie's about female Eskimos in the North Pole. And my friend said, what? You wrote it. Flick of the pen. Just write me in. So an actor wants to be in it. And I have friends. I'd like to put them in when I can, but sometimes I can't.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you.
He's going to be hitting me up for parts. Well, you know what? I may be hitting him up for stuff. So, you know, can you put my short film on there?
Well, maybe I can.
Most definitely.
I can put this together and make some money.
There it is.
Let me ask you: you were in Straight Outta Compton. What role did you play?
I was in the opening sequence. I played a character named Tone. I was in that major action sequence when they knocked down the drug house and everything. Right. I was one of the guys in there that was selling them drugs.
Great movie.
Thank you.
A friend of mine, Mark Sherman, played Jimmy Iovine.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I love it.
You did great.
Yeah, now the movie was incredible.
See, Mark,
man.
I mentioned you, Mark, if you're out there.
Gave him a shout out.
Alan, do you ever get stereotyped then? Because that's quite...
No.
No? No. Do you play lots of different roles?
I play tons of different roles. I play dramatic, comedy, tough guys, funny guys, nerds.
So you can go from the drug dealer to the nerd.
Yeah. Simple, just a twist of a hair. I played a boxer. I've been blessed to play a lot of a variety of roles, and it's just getting started.
I was going to ask you, actually, you brought up boxing. I noticed your necklace. I designed jewelry for a shopping channel here in America, Shop LC.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what your necklace is.
It's two boxing gloves.
So you are a boxer?
Yeah, I love boxing. My father was a boxer. So it's something that... I guess in the past 6 years, I've gotten really serious at and really just been training. Not that like I'm going to be a pro fighter or anything like that, but I really enjoy it and I really love the, how you can see your growth. Like working out, you know, when you lift weights, you can't get better at lifting weights. You just learn how to lift weights and you get there, but you can see boxing is a skill where 5 years ago, I could see where I'm at, and where I'm at now is totally different. I can see the growth. So it's an entertaining way to keep myself in shape, and also something that I love, seeing the ability grow.
Do you think then I always think if you're good at something and you're an actor, would a dream role for you be to play a boxer then? Is that something you'd like to cross
over? I did a film a couple of years ago. I played a boxer. I played the welterweight champion of the world in this film, and it was an incredible time. It was fun to be able to, you know, put both of my loves in together in a film and kind of play that flamboyant and crazy, money-hungry, arrogant boxer that you tend to watch and sometimes root for and sometimes not rooting for them. So it was just a fun role to be able to box and act at the same time.
What's the name of that film?
Called Ringside.
Okay.
Wow. I'll tell you can do it all, man. I'm sitting here going, wow, there's anything you can't do.
No.
you want to see Alan's IMDb page. It's pretty long. All the credits that he's got, you just don't know where to start. I think Blackish, though, is kind of what's taken over.
Yeah,
right
Blackish is an incredible show to be a part of, just being able to keep our thumb on the social pulse and be able to have these open discussions and open conversations about tough topics that the writers, they are great in executing in the show and kind of just staying down the middle and being able to just... again, open the conversation, make these uncomfortable situations a little more comfortable and more conversational, and actually have people listening to each other rather than everybody in a defensive position.
Yeah, that's good.
So, honey,
Hello.
we're here talking, honey. How you doing?
Yeah, great. I'm going to talk to you about the short film platform Coppola.
Please. Well, you did something with Coppola,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's my first job with you when I was what? 14.
13.
It was Dracula.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, wow. That was amazing. Amazing.
Was, gosh, how many years ago was that?
Like I said, like...
25 years, 30 years ago, right? Something.
That was one of your first?
Did you
audition for that?
Oh,
what
yeah.
was the process?
It was very interesting because actually there was some nudity in the role, which was fine. And one of the... Fine is
what'd
a problem. But what
that
happened
was, fine,
was
huh?
No, but the two audition with nudity is always interesting because it's, you know, it's a skill to some extent to be able to be okay with taking your clothes off. And one of the things that we had to do, because it was a period piece, and I get a lot of period pieces, is they wanted, they asked me, okay, after I auditioned, they said, would you mind, this is the day of Polaroids, us Polaroiding you with your clothes off? I'm thinking, ah, it's Coppola. How can I say no?
Wait, and this is you're 13?
No, that's a joke.
Oh, okay, I was lost. I'm like, Jesus, what is going on? Like, the industry has changed.
I'm not that kind of age.
Okay, hey, I'm just checking.
But I have, to make, you know, to be clear, I've known him my entire adult life.
Okay.
So I was older than 13.
So you're 18. We'll just clear that up.
Yeah. I love it. You're 18. All right,
so I had to make this decision, like, am I going to, like, take my clothes off and be Polaroid? But it was Coppola. But did I take my clothes off, be Polaroid? Okay, it's enough. I took my clothes off. So I said, okay, honey, you're just going to do this because you want this part.
Right.
And they were groovy about it. It was really done very nicely. I remember the casting director very well, but she was really cool and... It was fine, and it paid off, so that was gone. Now you guys have to give me this part.
Right.
So, right. Honey, when you actually auditioned, I bet you felt more vulnerable and exposed in the audition and not actually on the film set. Was that,
I maybe I'm just a jaded girl. You know, I grew up...
Got a lot of exposure out of it.
Yeah, I guess I didn't ever really, that vulnerable word didn't really come in other than the Polaroid thing was like, what? It's forever. But that's how long ago it was. Polaroids.
Well, I actually think the film is forever. The Polaroids probably got lost.
But I wasn't paid for that, you see. So I'm like, you know.
Polaroid seems more personal.
Yeah, and not paid. Okay,
and not
can
paid.
We get back to that?
Yeah, right.
It's like, if I'm going to do that, I want to be.
Right, okay. Right.
So, honey, but it paid off.
So honey, you went into making movies too. And movie that you made was...
I won this little script competition thing, and I had a feature, and Melvin Van Peebles at the time was attached to direct.
Oh, nice.
We love him. But long story short, I made the short version of it, and I thought, well, I'll just enter it in this script competition thing, and then I won the funds to make it. So I did, and it was really popular in the circuit and did really well. It's film unto itself, even though it was sort of a derivative of the feature.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a documentary short form with Tippi Hedren about the Vietnamese nail industry, which she played a very pivotal role in. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but she was the person who basically created the Vietnamese nail industry, which I guess 90% of the nail technicians are Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
So... Anyway, so it was a short form. It qualified for Academy Awards. Didn't get it, but it was that was the last year they had short form docs in the Academy Awards.
So, honey, what do you like? Do you like acting more than producing?
I don't know. I hate producing. Don't make me do that. I'm good at it, but I hate it.
That's
it's
your
like,
answer,
Sid. Don't you think it's the most thankless job there is?
Yeah,
truly. But I like acting. You know, I guess, and the writing and.
You're well, you've got 10 wins. I noticed you've won 10 awards.
Yeah, I have a lot of awards for some script competitions, and the films won tons of awards. And, you know, it's been a ride with all that. And I have a film now that just won an award, a feature, for it was like 3 writing competitions into one, and there was like 1,300 entries, something crazy. And I thought, oh, I'll never get this. Then I was nominated. I'm like, I'm not going. And then I thought, okay, I'll go. And then so I'm glad I went. And so we're really glad about that. And it's a feature that has a gentleman named Alexander Bach who did Agent 47. He's the director and he's attached to it.
Let me ask everybody here, start with you, Nick. I'm a guy that wants to produce. I've never done anything really. And I write. How do I get started?
quit the business and
right.
go back to whatever it was. Before. well, listen, it's different for everyone. I mean, if you have a script and you want to write it, write it. You know, yeah. nothing gets done unless you do it. Producing, that's different. I mean, the first time out of the box, but people have done it. I mean, I started doing it. I just said, I'm going to do it myself. Just started asking around who's interested in, you know. I was a little different for me because I was an actor and I already kind of knew a little bit of what I was doing and I was always writing. But someone new, you have to just do it. You have to just get out there, write your script, show it to people, take the rejections, but keep pushing forward and just try to get it to people. Just, you know, it's really hard, but occasionally someone you think, oh, you can never get it to that person. Never. And sometimes they say yes. So it depends on how hard you try, who you try. You're going to get a lot of rejection. It's all rejection. But if you give up, then nothing gets done.
So, Alan, I'm an actor in town. Never did anything. What advice could you give me about what I have to go through to get to where you are?
Well, the first thing is to understand that this is a business. Understand that it's 80% business, 10% politics, 10% talent. Meaning that your talent should be automatic. Meaning that that should be a skill that's already there. Being that you must set yourself up as a business. Being that you are a product. Being that you need a demographic. Meaning that you have a target demographic. Where a lot of actors just throw stuff against the wall and hope it sticks. Rather than have a brand. All of our favorite actors have a brand. Johnny Depp is a box office character actor. Denzel, Will Smith does the impossible, overcomes the impossible. Every one of his films, they all have like this brand. So you have to understand whether you're Coca-Cola or you're Mountain Dew, meaning that, you know, your packaging has to say that. Your packaging has to say where Mountain Dew is extreme. They're marketed to extremists. Motorcycle stunts and gamers and, you know, it's bright green, yellow. It says that. So as an actor, you have to figure out what is your business? What is your company? What is your brand? What is your product? And begin to build and just like, don't think of it as a career. Think of it as a small business. And you'll put yourself in the mindset to withstand the obstacles that's going to come forth. Whereas a career, you think I'm going to get paid on day one. Where in a small business, you're going to know from the beginning, you're going to be in the red for at least 5 years. Okay. You're going to be investing more than you're getting back. So, it's about building brick by brick. And that will be the best advice I can give any actor. Okay.
Now, Liz, I want to ask you a question. Liz, by the way, is a fantastic actress. But she also was the former Miss Great Britain. And if I have a daughter and she wants to get in front of people and, you know, she loves performing, what advice, if somebody wants to get into the pageant business, what advice would you give them?
Well, I think the United Kingdom is very different to America. I think in America, you look at former beauty pageant winners. You've got Oprah Winfrey, she won a pageant. Mm-hmm. You've got Sharon Stone, you've got Halle Berry. I mean, in America, you can actually turn being a beauty queen into being a lead actress. Very different in my country. So, I mean, I come from Wales, and first I wanted to be a ballerina, and that didn't happen for me because I'm too tall and too big boned. So age 11, I knew rejection and, you know, cried for weeks because I knew I wasn't going to go to the top ballet schools in the UK. And then I was asked, what do I want to do? I said, TV presenting, acting, and kind of followed through with that. Obviously hosted more than 40 TV shows in my own country, South Africa, and then here. What advice? Do I think beauty pageants are a good way? I think I own a beauty pageant, as you know, back home, and it's now in about 8 different countries. I do think putting kids in beauty pageants is great as long as there's kind of no makeup involved. We're going off on a tangent really with this story, but I think any exposure you get to confidence and being on stage and just being able to perform and becoming so relaxed in who you are is a great thing. How's it perceived in Hollywood? I think I get stereotyped, don't you? I think people think, oh, she's former Miss Great Britain. Yeah, bring her in. We want the pretty one. Or, no, she can't do serious roles. So, I don't know. I'm kind of I sit on the fence with it. Are beauty pageants good? Are they bad? It's just something that's part of me. Okay. It is my brand.
All right. So, honey, the great actress that you are, what advice would you give to some girl that just came to town? Not the nude story, but what advice?
Well, I mean, patience is everything. You have to have a drive. I mean, it has to be, I'm not saying don't have a life. As you know, I do. You know, I work and I have my personal life and I'm all groovy with that and finding that balance is good. But I do think that it's really important.
Yeah, I was waiting.
The patience part of it is super important.
Cool. All right. We've been having so much fun here. We forgot about the commercials. All right. We got a break for a little time here and we'll be back. And thanks for all these guys and girls coming today because we have a fantastic show. All right, we'll be right back.
You check things all the time, like your email every 10 seconds or your ex's Instagram. But what about checking something as important as your credit? Well, Discover makes it quick, easy, and best of all, free. Discover is now offering FICO credit scores to everyone for free, even if you're not a customer. And checking your score won't hurt your credit. We call it the Discover Credit Scorecard. And once you know your score, you should check to see if your current credit card is the best fit for you. Check your credit. Compare your card. Go to discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969. This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
You check things all the time, like your email every 10 seconds or your ex's Instagram. But what about checking something as important as your credit? Well, Discover makes it quick, easy, and best of all, free. Discover is now offering FICO credit scores to everyone for free, even if you're not a customer. And checking your score won't hurt your credit. We call it the Discover Credit Scorecard. And once you know your score, you should check to see if your current credit card is the best fit for you. Check your credit. Compare your card. Go to discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Winter is on its way. Is your grass cut out for it? Fall is the best time to seed your lawn, and right now the Home Depot has 20% off Scott's Turf Builder grass seed bags, 15 pounds or larger. Only Turf Builder has WaterSmart Plus coating technology, along with nutrients to jumpstart new growth and protect against diseases. Get healthy grass guaranteed. For a healthy lawn, it's time to sow the seeds of success with 20% off Scott's Turf Builder grass seed, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through October 11th.
One size fits all has no place in your bedroom. Hi, I'm Christian von Rickenbach, founder of Helix Sleep, and we know one mattress can't work for everyone. That's why we created the only mattress built for you. Go to helixsleep.com, take our 2-minute sleep quiz, and we'll build your custom mattress and ship it to you for free. Try it for 100 nights, and if it's not the best sleep you've ever had, we'll pick it up and give you your money back. Go to helixsleep.com/talkradio right now, and we'll give you $50 towards your custom mattress. That's helixsleep.com/talkradio.
What is us?
Us is a foundation.
Us is the future.
Us is a bond.
But right now, that bond is frayed.
And we need a place that could make it whole.
From diabetes prevention to safety around water.
The Y fills the gaps.
And bridges our divides.
But they can't do it without us.
Donate today.
Because where there's a why, there's an us.
Led by members of the Y.
The Y, for a better us.
Right now, the Home Depot has select special order Anderson windows and patio doors for 15% off. If you've been waiting for just the right time to upgrade, you're in luck. You're also in good company. J.D. Power has recognized Anderson for outstanding customer satisfaction with windows and patio doors. So stop waiting and start saving. Select Anderson windows and patio doors, 15% off now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through October 11th. See store for details.
When you're hiring, you want qualified candidates fast, and it can be hard to know where to find them. More than 3 million businesses use Indeed.com, the world's number one job site. Whether you need entry-level or highly skilled employees, Indeed helps you find great talent and make the right hire. Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to give their first job post premium visibility as a sponsored job. Redeem this offer at Indeed.com/promo. That's Indeed.com/promo. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Blue Star medicated ointment works fast to relieve the pain and itch of almost any skin irritation.
It's amazing. It's like as soon as you put it on, you can feel it working.
We've had Blue Star in the family for years. It works on everything.
I love the cooling sensation on my athlete's foot.
What a relief for my eczema.
Nothing worked on my dry, cracked skin until I tried Blue Star.
Blue Star is great for scalp itch.
Look for the white box with the Blue Star in the first aid section. Feel Blue Star work fast or your money back.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Geico's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with Geico, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than Geico. More power to you. Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790. KABC.
Oh, yeah, we are back. This is Sid Levine, and it's the Sid Levine Show. We're having a great time here with Nick, Alan, Liz, Honey, and Marissa, wherever you are, behind me, okay.
I think we just came to air with Honey saying that a cat sucks her thumb.
Yeah, my cat sucks her thumb.
That is amazing.
He does. He's a big boy. He's like, I'm so big.
And he's like, oh, that's incredible.
He's
I love
so
it.
So fanny. Yeah.
He's all right, I'm not going to touch that.
it's a different show.
So, yeah, that's a much different show. Anyways, so, Honey, you're working on a huge project with Paul.
Paul McCarthy. Yeah, he's a very well-known artist and filmmaker. And it's called Coach Stagecoach. And I can't tell you a lot about it, but I can tell you it's loosely based on Stagecoach, the John Wayne movie from 1939, is it? Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty wild. So we're doing it till the end of November.
Well, that's great.
Yay.
Got a good part.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Did you take your clothes off at this point?
Actually, I do at some point, but, you know, it does happen. It's the Wild West. So,
you stick with me, kid.
Yeah, see?
I love Wild West films, don't you?
I do. I love the old ones.
So funny, yeah.
They used to go to, what I heard, they used to go to ranches in Texas and Wyoming and get the ranch hands, and they would be the guys on the horses. And some of them got discovered, I think Gary Cooper, some, you know, that hit it big.
Wow.
And they were just ranch hands.
That's amazing.
And the next thing they knew, they were in the movies. And they were with Gene Autry, and they were with all these people, because where do you find them?
Well, think about it. They had to ride the horses, you know, and that's just something. That's a real skill set. So
yeah.
It makes sense, almost.
You have to ride the horses, Honey.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I'm sticking with Sid.
Alan, Nick, can you guys ride horses? Are you ready for the Wild West film?
You know what? I'm ready. I was a Boy Scout.
Yeah, doesn't mean you can ride a horse. Riding a horse is very different.
Hey, being a Boy Scout, I was almost an Eagle Scout, man, so I know how to do all that. I can make a fire. I can throw me in the wilderness. And I can do anything.
You can survive.
You put a piece of rope in front of me, I do 1,800 knots right now.
Oh my God.
It's a little fun fact. We'll give
you a little badge, you know.
Yeah. I had all the badges. I was a Cub Scout. I did the whole thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did a little Western a couple of years ago.
Did you really?
Hey.
Yeah. friend of mine, Lenore Andriel, she had the script and was producing it herself, you know, for her to be in it. And I came on, I brought Michael Biehn and James Russo and Christopher Backus, some actors into it. And they had a director. So she said, could you help me produce? So we're in the middle of nowhere out in Santa Clarita. And the director, first day, he kind of just fell apart. He just couldn't do it. He was overwhelmed. Overwhelmed. Mm. So they came to me and said, and this was only like a $220,000 movie, but it was big. Tons of horses, guys, gangs. And they said, would you do it? But the script had no, it was more for a woman, and which was fine, but it didn't have any cowboys and Indians shooting each other. So I said, listen, if I'm going to take this over, I got to kill somebody. I said, I have to kill a lot of people.
Right.
I said, plus, if you want to make your money back, even the trailer alone, is this thinking business-wise, the trailer needs to have, it's got to have some action. That's how you can sell it. It's a low-budget movie when it's not going to be a theatrical release. In order for you guys to even think about making your money back, at least if the trailer has action, you got to let me put action scenes in here.
Yeah.
So I literally had to just cut pages out and create. We only had 11 days to shoot the thing. And we ended up winning all these awards for it.
Wow.
It's crazy. And It's called Yellow Rock. You can get it on iTunes. And I won a pretty prestigious award. It's called the Wrangler Award at the Cowboy and Indian History Museum in Oklahoma. Big black tie event, almost like an Oscars. That's how huge it was. They give awards to HBO films, books. The year before, I'm choking. I don't know why. The year before, True Grit won. The year before that, 210 to Yuma, 310 to Yuma won. And then we won.
Nice.
Little thing. And I remember, I said in my award speech, they said, how did you, you know, do a Western? I said, well, you know, I'm Italian, so the gun part I had. I figured I've seen enough.
So your days when you were young, your dad worked at the Copacabana. Yes. He was a top maitre d'.
He started as a bouncer and he became eventually the maitre d'.
Do you have any stories of any performers you saw at the Copa?
Everybody. Name them.
I saw Tony Bennett.
I saw Diana Ross in the Supremes. I saw it on Diana Ross's lap. This is when they were brand new. This is the first, I think, when they didn't have a lot of black acts in the Copa. Nat King Cole, Sammy Davis Jr. were the first ones to break through. And then Berry made a deal from Motown to put Motown acts in there. So that was starting to happen. I saw the Four Tops, Temptations, everybody.
You see Dean Martin?
Bobby Darin. No, they were broken up. That was before. Everybody. Billy Eckstein. I saw Bobby Rydell. All that era of guys. Tom Jones. Amazing. Tom Jones, when he was first, women literally throwing themselves, jumping off balconies.
That's the power of Welshman. That's where I'm from, Nick.
And I ran into Tom Jones now, and he remembers, and he knows my fault. Tom Jones was huge at the Copa. Don Rickles. So that whole era I got to see, and I was a kid, you know, but I got to see it all.
So Goodfellas, the scene where they go to the Copa, and they're always set up a table for them, and they're wonderful and nice to them. Was that a true?
I was there for that scene. My father set that whole thing up for them. Because my father set the Copa up for them. He's in the movie, but they shot that at the actual, what was the original Copa.
Wow.
When the Copa closed in the 70s, they moved it across town. It was a disco, blah, blah, blah. But the actual space had not been touched for a long time. It was still there. So they shot it in the Copa. So my father, who was in the movie, Scorsese said to him, Tony, what did you do? Show us. And my father showed him how they walked him through the kitchen. My father used to literally, it was Don Rickles told me the story. He goes, I'm in the middle of the stage. The place is packed. You can't go anywhere. Because all of a sudden I see a table getting moved through the room. In the middle of the act, my father walked right on the stage, 2 feet in front of Rickles, banged down the table. Did the busboy put the thing? The guy handed my father $100, and he sat down these two mob guys. And Rickles said it was the funniest thing he'd ever saw. But all that stuff in there was real, and that's how it's kind of how it was. That long scene was amazing. How he did it, he filmed it. But that was the first time a Steadicam scene was done that long. But I was there for that.
Just give me, if you want, the audience, just a couple of gangsters, well-known gangsters you had met.
I don't know any gangsters. I don't know any names. No names of anybody.
Well, you must have been some big guys.
There were some big guys there, yeah.
Wow. That's, you got some great stories. Nick, all of you have fantastic stories. I want to thank you, Nick, big time for coming here.
Well, it's thanks
been a long
for
time.
Asking me.
Alan, thank you so much
you,
for
thank
coming
you, sir.
Here. Aww. Honey, thank you big
thank
time.
You.
And Liz, my beautiful co-star, fantastic actress, lights up every room.
Oh,
thank you
darling.
For doing the show as well.
Thanks, sir.
All right, till next Sunday.
Next week.
Here we go. See you next Sunday. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Sweet.
This show furnished by Sid Levine.